I'm Adam from Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Longbox Edition, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to the Starling Tribune. You might notice I am not, in fact, one Stargate Pioneer. Therefore, my friends do not call me SP. They call me Hey Dude or something like that because I don't really have great nicknames. Although that'd be pretty cool. But anyways, your reporters for this special summer edition of the Starling Tribune, looking back at episode 6 from season 1 of Legends of Tomorrow, are Neil.
This city will always need a Green Arrow.
And Lobster.
It's everything we've ever wanted. I got a fur coat. I got a chalice.
And of course, I'm Chris. Gentlemen, your timing is exemplary. This podcast is recorded live on Thursday, July 7th, 2016, over on Geeks.live, Facebook Live, and pretty much everywhere on the internet where we can put the Starling Tribune for people to consume it. We are just a few Gunna Geekers that normally discuss the CW television show Arrow, but you might realize Arrow's off-season is right now. We got to get our fix in somehow talking about DC TV, so we're here to talk about Legends of Tomorrow, and this is a good one because the Green Arrow is in it.
Cameo!
Cameo indeed. Just a little reminder that I am a self-described nerd. I proudly wave that banner. I love comics, gaming, all sorts of stuff, and I'm sure most of these other guys do too, and they're helping me catch up on the things I don't know about, especially Neil when it comes to things like Rebirth.
Yeah, I am reading a lot of Rebirth, and this is hilarious from a guy that used to host a Marvel comic podcast. I am reading all the DC titles right now, and we've talked about this before, but DC, guys, way to go. Way to bring the classic fans back to the fold.
Indeed, and we've got Lobster here to keep me on track on my Flash topics.
Absolutely right. We will work the tie-in machine.
Does that mean we have to make poo jokes like a Crimson Comet episode?
Always poo jokes.
Well, that's one. You guys can keep track in the chat room how many we get to this week. Over-unders, it's 6.5, so you guys can pick over-under right now.
We'll hit that easy. I can hit that in my sleep.
I'm so confused. But don't forget, we normally do cover the CW television show Arrow. Like I said, during the off-season, we're going to be talking about the 6th episode of the CW television show, Legends of Tomorrow, as well as news, articles, and other announcements that have dropped during the off-season. These will impact future episodes of Arrow when it returns for Season 5. These news stories and speculation will obviously contain spoilers for what happened in Season 4, so consider yourself warned, and watch Season 4 if you haven't already.
What are you waiting for?
Yeah, exactly. Another quick reminder, all of our past published shows can now be found over at GunnaGeek.com. The entire library is there, so if you've missed hearing our expert analysis on episodes of Arrow, head on over to GunnaGeekNetwork.com. Click on the little Starling Tribune logo like you see in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen, and that'll take you to all of the Starling Tribune-y goodness. I don't know if that really works for words, but I've been watching Whedon stuff lately.
It works. Just go with it.
And we're going to go with it. Neil, why don't you break down this current episode for us?
Thanks, Chris. So tonight, as you mentioned, we're going to be talking about Season 1, Episode 6 of Legends of Tomorrow, titled Star City 2046. The original air date was February 26th, 2016, and there's some new faces when we talk about the directing and production crew. The director was Steve Schill. Now, this was his first episodes of Legends of Tomorrow, and he wasn't really a Flash director either. He only did 2 episodes there and none of Arrow. He did do 1 of Supergirl, but he's got 56 different directing credits, 14 episodes of Law and Order, 1 of Constantine, 1 of The Following, 13 of Dexter, 2 of Blindspot, 12 of Law and Order Criminal Intent, The Sopranos, Rome, Deadwood, The Wire, and the list goes on and on. So a solid TV director. Now the writers, yeah, well, lead writer on this was Mark Guggenheim. He needs no introduction if you're an Arrow fan and you listen to this podcast on a regular basis. But the co-writer to Mark Guggenheim was pretty interesting, Ray Untarashit. And that wasn't a poo joke.
I think it counts as one.
Yeah, I'm glad you could pronounce it, because I was reading that and I was like, I'm not sure how to say this. I was going to dump it into Google and have it try and pronounce it for me.
Get the whole computerized voice. No. So Ray is a relative newcomer. He did do 16 episodes of Legends of Tomorrow as executive story editor, and only two as a writer. He was also a writer on one episode of Flash, four episodes of Tomorrow People, and two of Person of Interest. Now, it's worth noting that he has done 12 episodes of Legends of Tomorrow as script coordinator, and also as episodes of Undercovers, and 58 episodes as the script coordinator for the show Psych. So, making his move from script coordinator into the writing pool. So, way to go, Ray. And this was definitely a great episode to do it with.
Did you guys catch at the end credits, it said story by Ray Yu, we'll just go with? So I think he actually came up with a story idea for this one. And then he and Guggenheim wrote the script.
And in fact, actually, if you look forward to next week, I believe the episode was Taken. He is actually credited with the story for next week as well, and not a writing credit, which is pretty interesting.
Interesting.
He's coming up with the good ideas. He's probably pitching the ideas in the meetings. Like, what if we did this? And what if we did that? And they're like, yeah, but this other guy's going to write the script for it.
So what we're hearing is we're going to eventually see an episode of Arrow that says a story by Starling Tribune, because we're constantly throwing ideas out there. They just never take them.
Yeah, we should get credit. Guys, listen, it's just fair.
I think that's the fairest of all. So, Lobster, what can you tell us about the ratings for episode 5 on Legends Tomorrow?
Well, I know that I watched it when it aired, so it at least gets a 0.00001 rating. But no, actually, this episode got a 2.47, which was up from last week due to the Arrow crossover. And I think the appearance of Stephen Amell in this episode brought in some fans of Arrow and probably his goatee as well. And so Arrow, the Taken episode the same week, brought in 2.70. which was probably due to the Vixen crossover. The Flash had a crossover episode that week, which brought in Diggle and Layla, or Lila. It's Lila, right? They say Lila.
I've used both.
Fair enough. So, and Supergirl had the crazy CBS numbers, which was 7.25. So, yeah. I think if you were an Arrow fan coming to Legends of Tomorrow for the first time, like if you had just come for the Arrow connection, this is probably a good backdoor pilot to kind of give you the show in a nutshell.
It's definitely a good taste to be like, ooh, this is the kind of things that go on in that world. I might be interested in seeing this for myself.
By the way, backdoor pilot counts as a poop joke.
Oh. What is that, 3?
That's 3. It's interesting that, you know, with the 2.47 with this episode, it was actually their mid-season peak, and they continue to slide down into the ones shortly hereafter. So, you know, the crossover did what it was intended to. It brought in the Arrow fans. It just doesn't look like they all stuck around for the rest of the season, which is a shame because it gets really good.
It sure does.
It does, but like at the 2/3 mark, that's when it dips a little bit, to be fair.
When we break down this episode a little bit more, is actually the start of, I think, two of the major arcs through the series. One is sort of Rory's character development, and then the relationship between Ray and Kendra. So kind of that's kind of like the opening to their story arcs. And in kind of a way, this episode solidifies really the team as a force that's going to work together. So I think this, if you haven't watched it yet, this is kind of a good place if you came in for the crossover to start to follow these character arcs that you're going to get to see paid off later in the series.
So I think that's a good way to set things up. Like, maybe we should start talking about the episode itself. And one of
what
the things,
episode? Oh, wait, just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things we try to do each week with an episode of Arrow or Legends Tomorrow is talk about overall themes and how they fit into the title. I think it's pretty explicit this week. Star City 2046. We're in Star City in the year 2046, and everything is effed up.
In the future.
Yeah, exactly. So the title itself doesn't play into the theme, but would you say there is a theme, like an overall feel or a moral to this episode? Was it just the, you know, people figuring out what their commitment is to? I was looking for an overriding theme or you know, a voice. And I didn't really get one because there was so much going on in Lobster. You kind of talk to it. They set up, aside from all the action and the crossover, they set up some really important components. So while it wasn't moralistic or really thematic, it was a really important episode.
Well, I think it raises a big question about the nature of time travel. And this is going to be a recurring theme throughout the rest of the series. And I think not just this season, but if they continue to use time travel as a narrative device. So they accidentally wound up in the future. We should say from the last episode, this was a crash landing. They did not intend to go to Star City in 2046, 30 years into the future. But because they crash landed there, and it's kind of like this dystopian post-apocalyptic world, they're like, well, this isn't really what the future is going to look like. This isn't a future that's necessarily set. It's obviously been influenced by events that once we return you to your original timeline, you'll have some effect over. And it's kind of almost like an alternate reality in a way. They don't quite use those terms, but they've set up this kind of alternate future of Star City 2046. And so then the question, I think, in this episode becomes, what's your moral obligation to the people that you encounter in this? It might not be the real future, but if it's real to Sarah, or if it's real to Ray, or if it's real to even Rip wanting to save his family, what's your kind of imperative to take action in that situation? Do you just say, okay, you know, this isn't something that's really going to come to pass, so the people here don't matter, the lives here don't matter? Or do you kind of have an obligation to step in and make a change? And I think that that's kind of what we see the team grappling with. Now, I think you see the argument between Rip and Sarah is kind of like the vehicle for that discussion. But I think the way that Rory kind of approaches the future, the way that Captain Cold kind of has to deal with that and keep him in check in a way, is important. And I think ultimately, whether or not Oliver Queen, who we meet in this episode in sort of his disillusioned future self, is going to reclaim that mantle of being a hero. So I think probably the big theme in here is, are you going to be a hero or not, and just kind of let things slide and stay the way they are? Did I do a good job of trying to break that down?
I think you summed it up right at the end there, Lobster, that are you going to be a hero or not? That was a question that everybody was dealing with. I think John Diggle Jr. or Connor Hawke was dealing with that. Ollie was dealing with that. Snart was dealing with that. Mick Rory was dealing with that. Geez, everybody was. Really good observation, man. That's awesome. Rip was dealing with that. Sarah was dealing with that. Good guess. That would be the theme.
I think so. And I think there are other takeaways from this episode. It's hard when half the cast is kind of stuck on the ship playing out kind of a relationship drama.
That's called saving on special effects money for Firestorm.
But even that is kind of a narrative of personal choice versus, I don't want to say like destiny, because that kind of comes later with the stuff with Kendra and Hawkman there. What's his name? Hawkman.
Let's go with that.
Yeah, let's go with that. Whatever they call him, Prince Khufu.
Prince Khufu. I like to go back to that one.
Carter Hall. There we go. Gotta love the chat room.
I'm glad that someone was not brain farting like I was at the time.
Poop joke. Just kidding.
I guess so.
But I feel like that there was kind of a discussion in there of like, Ray wasn't interested in Kendra until somebody said something about it. And then he's like, now that you mention it.
That's destiny.
Yeah, I think there is something there. So that was kind of like a fun B plot, or maybe even C plot. But I think that it dovetailed kind of nicely, not only giving kind of a comedic counterpoint to the very grim reality of Star City of the future, but also giving those characters, and this is something that I mentioned the show does very well, gives the characters a way to kind of play off of each other and experiments kind of with different pairings. Okay, like you go work with you and try to fix the ship, and we'll team up and go do this thing. It's a lot of fun.
So let's step back a second. We were talking a little bit about trying to find the right way to be heroic and things like that. Is it really heroic when you go to fix something that is never going to be a problem when you leave, or is it an exercise in futility? I'm kind of on the fence. The action of wanting to save Star City, that's great. But when you leave, minutes after you leave, depending on your theory of time travel, that's gone. Unless we believe in a theory where it's just infinite worlds and they just created one world and moved over to another by doing that.
There's a metaphor of someone walking down a beach and seeing all of these starfish that are stranded on the beach, and they're all kind of drying out in the sun. And so the person's walking down the beach, picking up starfishes and throwing them back into the water. And someone else comes along and says, you know, why are you wasting your time doing this? You're never going to save all the starfish. And the person says, well, it matters to this one. And so...
But that one isn't erased from time.
Well, okay, but...
I love time travel for this very reason. It all depends on how the writers have set time travel up in this universe. Now, we have to assume, I think as a starting point for this discussion, that the Time Lord or Time Master on the crew knows how time works in this universe. And he tells us, this universe will cease to be when we go and set things right. Now, if this were a diverging multiple universes theory of time travel, then yes, everything was justified. These people would continue their miserable dystopian lives in this world where the people they love are gone, yada, yada, yada. But it's not. Rip tells us it doesn't happen. Let's change it. So therefore, at that point, everyone should have gone, oh, you're right.
But I think ultimately, like, if you go down that road, and I'm not saying it's not true, Rip Hunter, like, if that's how you think time travel works, that's fine. This show has shown us, like, many different, this universe, I should say, has shown us many different interpretations of how time travel and timelines actually work. If that's Rip Hunter's go-to explanation, and I'm saying if that's what helps him sleep at night, go with that one, Rip Hunter. But if you take the approach, and I want to shout out to my friend Kent in the chat room here. Kent is my co-host on Art House Legends. He's saying it's a problem for the people living in that timeline if it stays that way. Just because you go back to your prime timeline or whatever and may never see these people again, when you close the fridge, does the light stay on or off? Well, you don't know because you close the door.
A tree falls in a forest. Does anyone hear it? I mean, those kind of things.
Yeah. So do these people, like, does their timeline just stop and they, like, disappear from existence? Obviously, they've lived 30 years up until this point before you arrived. So they have a past. From our character's perspective, they don't know. But if they had a past, they have to have a future, right? It's logical sense.
So let's assume it all does go away. From our character's perspective, this is more of a moral issue than it is anything else. It's, do we help? Because Sarah's conflicted because this is her city. These are the people, her friends, her family that have been lost to this. So she has a personal attachment to it. Mick wants to be there because he can be king. He gets a chalice and a cool badass fur coat and stuff like that. So there's different reasons why people want to be there, but it all comes down to different responsibilities, or responsibilities might not be the right term for Mick, but certainly for Sarah, she feels responsible that much of this happened because she wasn't there to help.
Right. I guess my point kind of is, even if it's a complete fabrication, even if it's a fantasy world, you still, I think deep down in your core of your being, you're still governed by your morals and your principles. Again, you kind of get to see everyone's kind of reaction. Now, my interpretation of Rip Hunter is he's not 100% a good guy. And so...
And he would tell you that, I think.
Yeah. I think he would say, you know, forget it. It's Chinatown. And Sarah, I think, deep down is a good person. And she has the gut reaction of, you know, I need to help these people. And again, you can bring in the history of everything that she's trying to atone for that she's done. So there's a bit of self-punishment, I think, that goes in it, which makes sense for her character. If it is ultimately something futile, she's still going to try to fix it just to punish herself.
Before we roll on to, like, each character, because I think there's a lot of characters to talk about, I just want to thank our listeners for joining us this week on Time Travel Ethics with Starling Tribune.
This is why I love time travel. I dig these philosophical questions. And I mean, like, shows like Doctor Who and Sliders and everybody.
Star Trek did some of the best time travel episodes.
Yeah, the original series. Yeah, totally.
I come back to Sliders kind of with this one, because Sliders, they visited worlds that they would never, ever go to again. And sometimes they just, you know, had to survive and get through to the window to jump to the next one. But a lot of times they stayed and tried to help people. So I think the question of, I think it comes down to the characters and making a moral choice what they're going to do. And whether it's dealing with the past, which one can say, you probably can't really make any significant changes in the past, or whether it's the future that may or may not come to pass, you still kind of have to act as though this is real and what you do makes a difference.
That's fair. So I think it'd be safe to say we could probably debate the morals, ethics, and thoughts behind time travel all night, but we probably shouldn't, because people eventually get tired of hearing us ramble. Let's talk about some of those badass fights. One-armed Ollie coming in was one of my favorite things in there.
That was so great. He makes the classic superhero entrance after Sarah has thrown herself out there as a decoy. And there is nothing more classic than blocking a katana with a cybernetic arm.
Dude, you have a metal arm? That's awesome.
Yes, I'm so glad someone else said it before I did.
Oh, and I really want a Pop Funko of Old Man Ollie with the cybernetic arm. Everyone at Funko, if you are listening, don't make me make another custom, or at least ask my wife to make me another custom.
I want all the Legends of Tomorrow Funkos. I've never done a complete show. I know you have, Neil. I'm guessing maybe you have as well, Chris, because I know you collect them. But I would buy the whole cast of Legends of Tomorrow and the ship if I could get it.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
That is awesome.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah. Let's go back to the fights, though. There's all sorts of different fights, but I think for me, my favorite is still when Oliver gets his confidence back and is just mowing down folks, and then decides, I can take Slade. This man might have taken my arm, but I can take him, and he does a good job with it.
Grant. It's not even
Slade. That's right. I wanted him to be Slade. That was part of my problem so bad. When they showed him walking up, he had the mask on. I'm like, oh, is it him? Is it him? I was like, no, I know it's not Manu Bennett, but I really want this to be Slade. Maybe they just won't have him talk and he'll be ominous. They took the helmet off. I'm like, dude.
And it's this like greasy dude with an overbite. I'm like, no, this is not casting. This is not good casting.
It worked for me. I had no problem. I thought it's a younger badass. I could see this guy being Slade's son.
My problem was it wasn't Slade. That was my biggest problem. I was like, oh, damn you. Make this be Slade. He's my favorite character.
That was my reaction the first time I watched it. I was like, okay, bummer. It's not Slade Wilson. The second time that I watched it, I really did not like the guy that they picked. He just, okay, if you're not going to do Manu Bennett, if you're not going to do anything, this is the guy who accomplished what Slade could not and defeated the Arrow and toppled Star City. He just does not have that kind of gravitas, not at all, like not by half. And I don't know about Andy Diggle Jr. I wasn't a fan of him either. I thought the character idea was good.
No. You mean Connor Hawk. He doesn't go by Andy Diggle Jr.
He corrects us every time, or at least, you know, Ollie in the cast, every time that's used.
How do you know he goes by Connor Hawk? Don't worry, he'll tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's great that they did it, because anyone who's read the comics and stuff like that, they're like, oh, is this Oliver's son growing up that's going to be Connor Hawk? Because all we knew coming in is they cast someone to play the role of Connor Hawk in Star City 2046. And the swerve that, no, it's not Ollie's son, it's Diggle's son that's Connor Hawk. You're like, you sons of b****s.
And remember that if you've read the 80s and 90s run of Green Arrow that started with Longbow Hunters, you'll know that in issue 101, when Ollie is killed in an explosion, Connor takes up the mantle. So they'd already met. So Connor does become Green Arrow, which is pretty awesome. And then the recent, I think it was last year's DC Convergence event, it has Ollie and Connor kind of teaming up in an alternate reality. And it was pretty cool. So yeah, I'll take it. I'll take some way of getting Connor into this continuity.
And I mean, they've put the name out there. So it's not to say he can't show up again, because we do know that Ollie Prime does have a son that's out there somewhere, and the name had to come from somewhere. That's not a name that you pull out of a hat.
I think it was partly they're like, oh, we'll get those guys. We'll get the buzz starting if we use the name Connor Hawk. I think that's what a lot of it was you get the fans rabid for it.
Wait till it shows up on the IMDb page.
Yeah, not in a bad way, because then you get folks like us like, Connor Hawk, awesome. And I don't know about you guys, I'm not mad about that swerve. I'm like, oh, well done, more than anything else.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, before we leave the fights, let's just talk about some of the other fights that happen, then move on to some of the characters. I think the warehouse fight where they lose Connor, yeah, that one sticks out for me.
I think the best fight is between Rory and the gang leader, where he just toasts him, and they're like, oh, where'd you get that?
eBay.
It was great. And thugs galore. There were more thugs. There were Deathstroke thugs. There were crime, violent, you know, street thugs. There was thugs everywhere on this one. The extras got a lot of work in this episode.
They sure did. Had to be a fun one to be an extra on, though, I bet.
I feel like maybe this is one where they spent a lot of money on extras and costuming and a lot less on special effects, because you really only got a few seconds of CG stuff with the transformations and of Hawkgirl and Firestorm. And even the arm, I think, was practical, except for a couple pieces of it.
So I think Suncast brought up a good point early. He goes, I think the world looked a little too studio backlot, and I think that's partly because of budget considerations. And like Michelle's saying, they probably had to pay Stephen Amell as well.
Totally. Michelle in the chat, that's exactly what I was thinking as we're going through that. So
let's run down some of the other characters here. We kind of touched on it before. Rip's having to explain time travel and how this world won't exist to people and nobody's getting it. Is that just because he's a terrible time master?
I think so.
I think he would never be hired to teach at the Time Master Academy. I think he's more... I don't think he quite has that knack for getting points across. Or this just isn't a very teachable group.
Well, and also, I would like to say that any time it comes down to Rip saying you shouldn't screw with the timeline, he loses all credibility, because this entire show is based on Rip screwing with the timeline.
Yeah, that's one of the fundamental issues I have with the show, is it's all about, I need to go save my wife and son, but we can't have you save someone because that'll screw things up. And I'm like, but don't you say at some point there's a fate that time makes you follow?
No fate, but what we make.
Yes, exactly. I don't mean to dog on Rip Hunter, but I honestly think he's one of the weakest characters of Legends of Tomorrow, especially early on. He gets much better later on. You start to feel for him.
And then I honestly think he's intentionally weak to start with. I think it was a conscious decision when you had this ensemble show. They're like, we can't make him, like, if he gets everyone in line right from the get-go and is like this completely infallible, unflappable leader, that doesn't give any room for growth for anybody. So you make him like a shitty leader to start with, and then everyone else starts, like, they just have to like find their groove. And I think that works for a show like this.
No, I think that's fair.
Ray Palmer, I think we talked about this is the start of the romance arc with Kendra as well. Aside from that, yeah, I think you guys called it earlier on that half the cast was sitting on the Wave Rider, just, you know, fixing the ship and getting into relationship hijinks.
I will say that any romantic comedy arc that you can have Victor Garber play a role in, I'm down. Any kind of like hijinks that involve Garber, I'm in.
Yeah, I agree. And his little episode with, oh, I did a bad thing. And then with... You know, with Jefferson going, oh, we've got a psychic. What did you do? What did you do? What did you say? And that was actually, it was funny. It was a good rom-com element to it.
There's an element to that I kind of wish they would do more with this show, is kind of their psychic link between each other. They do it a little bit later on. Or was it the episode before this where he like carved something in his arm?
It was before this when they were in Russia. One of my only complaints is that we lost this comedic element with regards to the relationship, and it became very serious, very quick when they were trapped in the 50s, I believe it was. And I would have liked more of this.
Well, okay, so full confession, Night of the Hawk is probably my favorite episode of the series. So them trapped in the 50s, I was good with. I do think that like playing with the relationship triangle that they end up forming between Carter, or between Kendra, Carter, and Ray, like, it works better as a pentagon. When you put Jax and Dr. Stein in there too, that's just great. you have this this thing where like Stein is waking up and he just had like a sex dream about Kendra and he's like, but I'm married, this can't happen, no, this is wrong, and he has to go take a cold shower or something.
You know what? Yeah. I just think we talked about the writers stealing the Starling Tribune ideas. Please, writers, take Lobster's idea on this one, because that would be funny.
Yeah.
Listen, before we leave the characters, we have to talk about Mick Rory and Leonard Snart, Captain Cold and Heatwave, because I think more than anything, this episode was about their relationship. And it's, man, it's summed up in that one line when they're having their conflict. And Heatwave says, you're not the boss of me. And Cold just snaps, back and says, actually, I am. But without thinking about it, without pausing, it's like there is no question in his mind that he is the boss of him.
Exactly, yeah. And that's something Mick hasn't considered. And the line at the very end where he's like, I don't know who my people are anymore, that I didn't realize, but that is complete foreshadowing of where his character goes. And it is very, very well done.
And he makes it very obvious that, you know, he doesn't want to be the hero. He doesn't want to be the biggest badass. He's not even in it for the score, even though he has said in the past, you know, what you jive for, the perfect score. But he just wants to see the world burn. It's the chaos, the destruction, you know, that elemental pyromaniac that drives a lot of comic book flame-based villains. That sums it up right there. It's not the score. It's the chaos and the violence. And I think right there, you get that break from Leonard Snart.
And I have to agree with what Suncast is saying in the chat right now. He says, Heatwave and Cold are easily the best part of the entire season. Their dynamic has been great. I mean, and it was great in Flash. And I think it helps that those guys have worked together for years. Because remember, they're the Schofield boys from Prison Break.
Yeah, they've got the chemistry.
Ain't that the truth? So what characters have we missed right now that we need to talk to or that are worth talking about still?
We talked about a bit about Canary and Sarah in the lead up, talking about time travel. I think if Mick, Rory, and Leonard Snart were the focus on one half of the episode, then as you said at the beginning, the other half is Canary coming to terms with Star City 2046, with what has become of her friends while time has stood still. A lot of this is character building for Sarah, figuring out who she is.
Yeah.
And I would say as far as Kendra's character, who we really didn't touch on, she kind of isn't, and this is kind of one of my pet peeves about shows, when male characters fight for kind of like ownership of the female character. I do have a little bit of a problem with that. I think it's handled delicately enough in this one that it's clear that it's going to be up to whoever she's more interested in. But then the argument about, she would have chose me though. Oh no. Oh, you know, I'm not so sure about that one, but I think where they go with it works for the show.
I'm just glad she didn't mention, I used to be a barista again, because that's all we got for like the first four episodes.
If she can fix a Frappuccino machine, is a Frappuccino machine a thing? I don't even know. If she can fix one of those, she can fix a spaceship. No problem.
She did raise it right at the end when Ray was starting to get all romantic. And she said, you know, up until a couple of weeks, I was just a barista. I'm like, and there it is, folks.
Yeah.
Oh, she did, didn't she? Now I feel bad that I missed it.
She's done so much.
So what other characters should we touch on? I think we've got most of them.
I think that's
maybe
it.
Real briefly, let's revisit, because this is the Starling Tribune. What's Oliver been through up to this point?
Well, Felicity left him. All of his friends are dead and gone. We don't know whether Thea died or just left. I can't remember if they said on that one.
They're gone. Gone. They're in Tahiti? What, like, where did they go?
It's a magical place.
Yeah, magical place. Crossing the streams. So, I mean, he's basically been on his own for, what, 10 years? 10 plus years? And hiding underground with one arm. How's he doing all of his, like, salmon ladder stuff? Because the dude is, like, super ripped still.
You get even more ripped doing the one-armed.
That hurts just thinking about, let's be honest. One-armed cooking. No, I got nothing. No, I mean, obviously, life's been hell for Oliver Queen, and that's part of the reason why he's so beaten down, he doesn't want to go back out in that world. And it's kind of nice that Sarah inspires him, because in our timeline, he's inspired Sarah to do good before. It's symmetry.
I think that is the episode, guys.
Well, I think we've wrapped up this episode then. Well, I mean, talking about this specific episode, not this whole episode of the Starling Tribune, obviously. Neil, what can you tell us about next week's episode of Legends of Tomorrow?
Great. So the next episode is titled Marooned. It aired on Thursday, March 3rd, 2016. It was season one, episode 7. And when there's no trace of Savage, Rip spends time dwelling on the past, and Rory continues to be a liability for the team. The crew receives a distress call from another Time Master and seek it out, only to find that the ship was commandeered by Time Pirates. Great movie. Snart has an important decision to make. The director was Gregory Smith. Writers were Anderson McKenzie and Phil Klemmer.
Very nice. I can't wait. We're getting into some good ones here before we hit the lull, I'll be honest, and that one's a pretty good one. Every week, we try here on the Starring Tribune to go through what used to be the Bat checklist, eventually became the DC Comics checklist, and is now kind of the pop culture DC Easter eggs checklist for each episode, because in Arrow, Flash, Starling Tribune, all of those things, they're always jamming in some great pop culture references for us. And I think this week is yet another week where we have that going on. So let's work our way through the checklist. I'm going to hand it off to Neil. Why don't you go first?
Sure. Well, the very first one, and we've talked about this a lot, talking about DC comic book Easter eggs, is the appearance of Connor Hawke. Now, we talked about this in the comic books. It is Ollie's illegitimate son, who is given up to go study at a Buddhist monastery. He's a vegan. He is a very different kind of archer, lives a very pure life, half African American, very similar to how he was portrayed in this episode as John Diggle Jr. But some key differences from canon, as we've talked about. But really, a shout out to all the comic book fans that had our little nerdgasms when they said it was Connor Hawke.
I really did. Lobster, why don't you tell us about the next Easter egg we had on the list?
So the next one is an in-universe reference to Felicity taking over Palmer Industries. So we see the smoke building in the background through the smoke, ironically enough, of the burning Star City. And so that indicates that things work out for Felicity in this timeline, at least until she dies.
She's just gone. And Michelle's right. I guess she was a better boss in this timeline. Next up, we've got Grant Wilson, a.k.a. Deathstroke 2. He's not a new invention for Legends Tomorrow, guys. We touched on it earlier. He actually exists in the comics. He was affiliated with Hive in the comics, and he looks pretty much the same in the comics as he does in the TV show. In the New 52, however, he goes by the name Ravager and hates his father just about as much as he hates everyone else. But Ravager, call back to Season 2, is Summer Glau's character.
The next Easter egg was, again, if you're a fan of the comic books, seeing an old Oliver Queen with one arm, again, is nothing new. We've seen him before, except we've seen him in Mark Miller's The Dark Knight Returns, where he had one arm and had the big white beard as well. So this is a great Easter egg for comic book fans.
It really is, and I'm sure we've got some other ones. What do we got next, John?
The discussion of the uprising being the big event that has destroyed Star City, that is a thing that like comes up again and again anytime something bad happens. It's usually called an uprising, and there was actually an episode in Arrow Season 3 called Uprising that saw the city taken over by Brick, played by Vinnie Jones, a.k.a. I'm the Juggernaut Bitch. So we're just waiting for the next uprising.
That'll be nice. Again, we get another comic book reference. They talk about the warehouse at the corner of Adams and O'Neill, where Smoke Technology stores many of their in-progress projects. Well, if you're a comic fan, you know that's a nod to Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams, who had their acclaimed run on Green Lantern, Green Arrow in the 70s.
The next Easter egg is more of a pop culture type reference. And it's this idea of time travel creating the future that you actually dread, the whole dystopian idea. They're creating their own dystopia by not going back and by not fixing things and by not coming back to the timeline. And at one point in the episode, Rip tells Sarah that by trying to fix the future, she might inadvertently set into motion the very events that create the world that she's so scared of. This is a common theme in time travel, and I think some of the characters, especially Dr. Stein, even talk about it throughout the season.
That's true.
So, another reference to other episodes of Arrow. So, the statement, he's been taken, just like Oliver's son William in the previous episode of Arrow, so from a literal heir to a figurative heir being taken or kidnapped.
Sure, and if you listen to the musical score while we're in Star City, it might have sounded pretty familiar to you because a lot of those chords, a lot of those sounds came from Oliver Queen's theme that we hear a lot in the episodes of Arrow. So they kind of pulled some music and some scoring out of Arrow to put in Legends of Tomorrow.
And the final Easter egg is pretty cool, actually. When Heatwave and Captain Cold are talking about when they lied to each other, or, you know, has Cold lied to Heatwave, they say, yeah, the Black Hawk armored car job. Well, if you've been paying attention to Flash, that was actually in an episode of Flash, the Black Hawk security van. So it's a nice callback to something that we've recently seen in the sister show to the series. So very, very cool. The writers are paying attention.
That was pretty sweet. So that wraps up most of our Easter egg checklist items. Nothing really super Batman related, other than the fact we kind of linked to a Batman story here, but that's not bad. But we do have a ton of news, and I guess our first news story kind of ties in with the Batman himself. Kevin Smith had some information for us about his character Onomatopoeia, didn't he, Neil?
Yeah, so, and again, while you know Onomatopoeia from Kevin Smith's time on Batman, I know Kevin Smith's character or villain from his time on Green Arrow, which was awesome. Now, there's been some talk about Kevin Smith maybe bringing Onomatopoeia to Arrow. No confirmation. He keeps talking about how he'd love to do it. Well, on a podcast, I think last week, he actually said, all right, I figured it out. Actually having this silent character that just talks in sound effects might not work on the show, but what if he used business cards or just little slips of paper that had the word written on it? So, you know, before he shoots you, you look at your desk and there's a card, then you pick it up, you're like, boom, what does, and then your office explodes. Or slit, and he's like, slit, what the, and then somebody sneaks up behind you and slices your throat. So he's figured out how to work in sound effects into this. And, you know, in his words, it would be awesome.
It really would. Some other awesome news that came out of the Heroes and Villains Fan Fest this last weekend is that former WWE superstar Cody Rhodes, who you might have known as Stardust, is going to appear in Arrow as a guest star. During a panel, Cody Rhodes confirmed it and said, "You can probably expect Steven and I to get into another fight. We don't know anything else about who he's going to be, but he will show up in episode 3. And I gotta admit, I actually bought a pay-per-view for wrestling that had Stephen Amell fight Stardust just because it was Stephen Amell fight. Okay, buy is incorrect. I took my 1 month trial of the WWE Network and used it to watch that one pay-per-view match. And I was like, nice. And it took me back to my childhood. So it's kind of cool that they're able to take Cody Rhodes and actually bring him into the show after Stephen was on, I think he was on WrestleMania for it.
And he's not the first wrestler to come on, right? The guy who played the Atom Smasher?
Mm-hmm. I believe so. Yeah. It's not unheard of for wrestlers to cross over into the TV side of things. I mean, in fact, The Rock's big break was before he did the Scorpion King stuff, was he was in an episode of Star Trek Voyager.
And the interesting thing is that Cody Rhodes is no longer with the WWE. He wanted to move away from the Stardust character and really develop a new persona. And WWE said, no, if you're going to be on our network, you're going to be Stardust. So he terminated his contract.
Seems like it's opened some new doors for him, though, getting to go and get into the acting side of the house. So congratulations to Cody Rhodes. And I wanted to save this next story. I wanted to make sure that Lobster got it because we get to talk a little bit of Flash with this next story.
All right. So if you've seen the season finale of The Flash, raise your hand.
This is great for an audio medium.
Okay, perfect. All right, at home, listening at home or in the car or on public transportation, put your hand down.
If you're driving your car, don't put your hands up.
Flashpoint is the big setup, and it has been confirmed by Grant Gustin that Flashpoint is definitely happening. Will that impact Arrow? So the takeaway from this story, Stephen Amell said sure in a response to a question about Flashpoint impacting Arrow, adding, you bet, when someone followed up by asking majorly. So the takeaway from this is Stephen Amell has no idea how this will impact Arrow. And I think the writers are probably still figuring that out themselves as they're breaking the new season over the summer. So it is completely plausible that Flashpoint or events on the Flash that affect the reality of the dimensional fabric could affect Arrow. Whether or not we will see that actually play out is another matter entirely. So Amell said he was just kind of being sarcastic when he said sure, when seriously, I have no idea whatsoever, is what he should have said. But we will be watching to see not only how this impacts Arrow and the Flash, but also the new edition of Supergirl, to the CW universe, and ultimately a show that really should be kind of pissed off at The Flash for f***ing with the timeline. The people on Legend of Tomorrow should be like, dude, knock that shit off. That's our job. You're f***ing ruining our job. You're putting us literally out of work. So I think it'll be interesting to see how things shake out.
Sorry, SP.
Lobster, this is a clean a clean podcast. Clean.
Sorry.
I'm just sitting here laughing because I don't have to edit it.
No, I don't have to either. So we do have a few more Arrow-specific news items. We'll go through them a little quickly because we are running a little late on time because we like to argue time travel. So real quick, Diggle, he's getting a new helmet because we weren't happy with it. And David Ramsey thought the design should be a little different too. And guess what? Cisco gets to build a helmet. Protect the back of the head a little bit. Concussion dangers.
I'll take the next story. And this one's for Chris. Yeah, I know you're going to be excited about this one. At Heroes and Villains Fan Fest, Stephen Amell shared his thoughts on Alicity and said, you know, he's heard from fans that they're not 100% positive on the relationship. But he said, there is an opportunity for a lot of positivity and reassuring notions when it comes to Alicity. And that it's important to remember that relationships on the show don't have to be defined by romance. They can have a wonderful, dynamic relationship and not be romantically together, right? So there's still something there. They're not, you know, not totally killing it. We'll see what happens.
As long as I don't center the show all around Alicity again, like they did for a good chunk of this season, that's okay.
Well, I think they learned the lesson about giving the fans what they think they want, when really what they should be focusing on is good writing.
And speaking of that, this week, production has started on Arrow. If you've been following Stephen Amell on social media, you'll know that he landed in Vancouver on Sunday the 3rd, and then said, screw this, I want to go back to LA and visit my family for the 4th of July. I got held up at the airport, lost his passport, didn't have his permanent residency card, got pulled into customs and immigration, finally got down there, and then came back at the end of the day, basically flew all night and went right to production on the 5th. So way to go, Steven. Spend some time with your family. And by the way, we have had amazing weather in Vancouver all spring and most of the summer up until this week. Because you know they need that high-def water, that sheen on all the roads for Arrow. Has to be gray and gloomy. So, guys, thank you for bringing the rain. Love it.
So we do have some general DC TV news to go through, and we'll kind of go through these ones a little quick, too. Kevin Smith, we know he directed an episode of Flash this last season. It was probably one of the best episodes of the season because it tugged at the heartstrings a little bit. He did confirm with an interview over at Den of Geek that he'll be back as director around mid-season. He said, I know I'm going back to The Flash first week of September to direct episode 7 of season 3. Still haven't heard anything back from Arrow. So Kevin Smith will be returning to do another episode of Flash.
I'm so excited. That was a fantastic episode that he directed. And I think it's really kind of opened the door for him to do more television. We know that he's doing a Buckaroo Banzai series, which Clancy Brown told him, don't F this up.
He is also wanting to do Mallrats 2 instead of as a movie, a TV series.
I wholeheartedly endorse more Kevin Smith TV stuff.
And since Neil is sitting in the Gunna Geek Financial Nerf Center, so I think we have to let him take this next story because there are some financial issues that could come into play on this. So Neil, we're going to defer to you as the expert in the Gunna Geek Financial Nerf Center.
Well, this week, and we knew this was coming, folks, the CW and Netflix confirmed an exclusive deal to air entire seasons of CW shows 8 days after their seasons end, exclusively on Netflix. So we've talked about this, that it's plausible and maybe even possible that Arrow has suffered because people cannot binge watch entire episodes in the lead up to the new season. People maybe hear good things about it over the summer and go, oh yeah, I should catch up. And if you weren't a Hulu subscriber and Hulu didn't have the entire thing, it would have been tough. Of course, you could resort to alternate means. So let's run down who's going exclusive to Netflix. That means Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl, iZombie, Supernatural, The 100, Vampire Diaries, The Originals, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, Jane the Virgin, and even the new shows coming to CW this year, including Riverdale, the Archie and Jughead show, Frequency, and No Tomorrow. So this is huge.
That's going to be pretty cool.
Or huge for all our US listeners.
When will this go into effect for Hulu watchers?
I think it's the end of next season. I'm not sure.
I think so. I don't know. I just saw how it impacted Netflix, and honestly, I don't have Hulu, so I was like, I don't care about that piece. Tell me about my Netflix. One last DC general news story we should talk about. There's a new trailer that came out for the Batman Unlimited original movie called Batman Unlimited Mechs vs. Mutants, which features Mr. Freeze's latest invention, supersized Killer Croc and Bane. And he turns them into giant mutant monsters that bash their way through the streets of Gotham. Why are we bringing this up, you might ask? Well, it's because Batman and Green Arrow save the day by piloting their own giant robot mechs into combat as well. That's right. It's Pacific Rim Gotham style.
There's nothing wrong with that. Hey, maybe we should run down some toys and comic news. And there's a whole bunch that came out this week with SDCC around the corner. We should expect more and more geeky goodness coming out. The first is that we've talked about the SDCC exclusives. This, finally, is not an exclusive. Funko is coming out with Pocket Pops. These are the keychain pops for both the Arrow and Flash. And Chris, they must listen to the podcast because hashtag no sleeves for the Arrow Pocket Pop. What's odd, though, is the Flash has the red disc on the chest. So they are going with the current Arrow, but the season one Flash. Yeah, I'm not quite sure about that. A little liquid paper, I'm sure you can fix that up there, Lobster. This Week in Comics, Green Arrow number 2 from Rebirth came out. Writer Benjamin Percy.
I'm sorry. What was that again?
Rebirth.
Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. Sorry, I've fallen down on the job here. just for you guys. And not only did I buy a digital, just to keep the numbers up, I went for our video listeners and picked up the alternate cover. Available in the comic book stores. Yeah, it's a great image. Percy Schmidt did the cover. And that's not to say that Juan Ferreira's covers aren't awesome as the primary covers. But it's been fantastic. And this episode kind of picks up from the cliffhanger. And I think, not really a reboot, but this is a bit more of a break from the New 52. He loses a bunch of stuff, and a couple of characters do things that are a bit not in character. Without spoilers, there's hints that one of the people who you think might have been doing something maybe had different motives as well. And they bring back a character that we haven't seen in quite a few issues that has a link to the Arrow TV show. So go and pick up Green Arrow number 2 from Rebirth, The Death and Life of Oliver Queen. It's also really worth mentioning that this year is the 75-year celebration of the character of Green Arrow. And in recognition of that, DC has put out a new trade paperback graphic novel called Green Arrow, A Celebration of 75 Years. And it runs down his story, all the little twists and turns he's taken from first appearing in 1941 as a 20th century Robin Hood in a tale by Mort Weisinger and George Papp. It tells the story of our very own Emerald Ulcher as he's evolved and become the character he has today. So check that out on Comixology or go to your local comic book store and definitely pick that out. In more toy news, and not really toys, because these, I wouldn't give these to little kids, but if you're a miniature gamer or a war gamer, there is, and I still call them lead figures, but they're not lead anymore because that's evil, but pewter die-cast figs. Put out by Knight Miniatures, there is a Batman game, and in May of this year, they announced the Arrow expansion pack for that. Well, this week, they announced a new Diggle character and rules for Diggle, and also a new CW Flash character coming to that miniatures game. So if you're a figure gamer, definitely check these out. I was by my local comic book shop today. These figs are sweet. And that's it for toy ink.
Oh. Our friend Kent in the chat is a tabletop gamer as well, and he says that he's seen them before and they're very well done, and that company also has the Marvel license.
Ooh. They do, and this week on Gonna Geek I actually talked about my 40k background and some great stories, so Kent, I'm right there with you. They look awesome.
So before we transition off the news stories, Michelle brought one up in the chat that I completely forgot about. CW is going to be re-airing episodes of Supergirl before season 2 starts. If I'm recalling what I read correctly, every Monday night starting in August, they'll do 2 episodes of Supergirl until they have aired the entire first season and people can then watch season 2, which is pretty damn cool. So we're going to start wrapping up the show. As we do that, I wanted to give a big thank you to everyone that's been checking out the show on social media, on the Facebook, on the Twitter side of things. We've seen a giant uptick in follows and likes, and it's because of you awesome fans coming to check out all the content here. So thank you so very much.
Thank you, everybody. And listen, before we forget, we are part of an awesome network, the Gunna Geek Network. If you're into anything geeky, geeky comic books, TV shows, movies, film, you know, art house films, you name it, even radio plays, we have something for you. And we always like to give a shout out to one of our fellow network podcasts this week, encouraging you guys to check out Game Life Balance US. This week is episode number 23, titled Independence Day Weekend 2016 with Guns N' Roses. Oh, yeah. John and Cody discuss illegal fireworks displays, the Book of Mormon, and Guns N' Roses Not in This Lifetime tour. Plus, hear about a bizarre anime called Belladonna of Sadness and a check-in with Summer Games drone Quick 2016. So check them out. Game Life Balance US from John and Cody.
Over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And while you're there, this is a new feature that's just been rolled out. If you head on over to geeks.live, you can always see our live content there. But what if you've missed something? Well, Stephen Jondrew, the network owner, El Presidente, as we've called him before, has things set up. If you go on to gunnageek.com/live or geeks.live when there's no live content, you will find YouTube videos that will start playing for you immediately of all of the past content from the Gunna Geek Network that is on YouTube. So you get pretty much on-demand access, all 24 hours content. It's fantastic. So thank you to Steven for rolling that out. And also a big thank you to our listeners and viewers, everyone who's downloaded the podcast, listened on Spreaker, replayed on YouTube. If you consume the show, thank you so very much.
And I really want to say thank you to all of the live participants in the Blab chat. We love your comments. You save our butts from time to time, and you really enrich the experience. If you want to join the craziness of the online chat, you can go over to blab.im at Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, or head on over to geeks.live. And if you're on Blab, search for Starling Tribune or Gunna Geek. And don't forget that after the show, we always open up the fourth seat on the Blab interface for our live listeners to hang out and share their thoughts. You can watch the next live show on the Gunna Geek Network over on geeks.live. The next live show is going to be Better Podcasting Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, where SP and our network president talk about all things podcasting.
Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe. Please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, because I think we deserve it for all of our awesome humor and fun and time travel ethics. And find us on Facebook. Give us a like. Upvote us on YouTube. Pester us on Twitter. You can rate us, review, subscribe. And all of our contact information is on the Gunna Geek Network at gunnageeknetwork.com. We can check out our forums and our other cool shows. If you're on mobile, don't forget about the Tapatalk app to listen to our forums, so you can tapatalk.
And if you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page or send in a tweet. And you can always give us a call and leave a voicemail at 1-612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283, and we'll be sure to put your voicemail on the show. Before we sign off, hey, I just wanted to thank Lobster for stopping by Star City this week. Lobster, where can our listeners find you?
You can find me on the Gunna Geek Network talking about CW's The Flash on the podcast Crimson Comet. And you can also find me talking about some of the greatest movies of all time on Art House Legends. Right now, we're in the midst of our Art House Summer, where we're talking about some of the greatest blockbuster summer movies. We just did Independence Day, and we're gearing up to bust some ghosts with Ghostbusters.
That's awesome. Guys, it's been a great episode of Starling Tribune. It's always fun to hang out and chat. That about wraps it up for another week. Any last words before we sign off and open up the Blab interface to our live listeners at John O'Lobster?
Hashtag, I think you think too much.
At Chris Farrell.
Hashtag time travel 101.
And I am at Neil Isn't Witty, signing off with hashtag I don't have to edit this podcast. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.